There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast. On the left.
Right from your grave.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
No, 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 no.
What is that?
That's nobody but me.
Oh, nobody can do the shimmy like I do.
Is this the start of the show?
I don't know if we legally can start the show like that. I tell you what, man, in August,
what?
You find me in New York City, uh-huh. Every chair I sit in is a goo chair. This is what you don't understand, Kissel, because we have not gone through the outline just yet, but there's a lot of goo chairs in this episode.
Oh, all right. Well, this is the last podcast on the left. I am Ben. That's Henry.
Ooh,
and, man. Well, actually, I'm Ben. And that's Marcus.
Yeah,
that but is. Henry is in the room, so I am sorry, Marcus.
I am slick with it today.
Yeah,
it
you just, look wet.
New York gets it out of me.
Ooh.
I get all covered in syrup, which is kind of good for the episode. I'm actually really happy that it worked out
right.
Like this. There's so much old lady slathered in syrupiness, just all their knees all covered in it. And the what you're going to see is that technically with Betty and Dreesen, and it's like I always picture my mom anyway, so just imagine my mom all slick with oil. And
all right. Well, I have not read this outline yet, so it's going to be new to me as well. Today, we're going to get out of this world, which I'm actually really happy to do. This world's not very good right now.
No, it's not.
So I'm happy to get out of this world. The Andreessen Affair. That is the name of today's episode, The Andreessen Affair. And I'm assuming it's not a couple's issue?
No. It is a singles issue.
Oh, okay.
It is very much a singles issue, as are many alien abduction episodes. So we're doing alien abductions, and again, what I'm really excited for, again, sci-fi and the idea of aliens and UFOs for me is an optimistic view.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sometimes do they scrape the eggs?
Yeah.
But you weren't going to use all them eggs.
No.
Half the time, how many women just shoot the eggs out all the time?
Absolutely. So, and men, we have an abundance of the substance that goes into an egg.
Can I ask a weird thing?
What?
Okay. Do you know, like, after you have an orgasm as a man?
Yes.
To, like, 20 minutes later, do your, like, balls tingle? Like, for me, and my idea is that it's my eggs, my balls are getting filled back up.
Yeah.
Yeah, could be. Yeah. I just picture like Santa Claus's, like, workhouse, mm-hmm. You know, and everyone's just, like, putting them back together.
Yeah. Yeah, just squeezing sperms out of a tube.
This is not the greatest workshop to be in. I don't know what I did to be here.
Smells like ammonia.
Oh, no.
Well, the Andreessen Affair was an abduction scenario that occurred in 1967,
ooh.
In which a mother of seven from Massachusetts named Betty Andreessen was supposedly abducted from her home and taken to a faraway planet and or dimension.
Ooh. I don't know why you keep saying supposedly.
We need to be fair.
I guess. Is this fair and balanced? Is that what the last podcast has become?
Yes, it is.
Well, this abduction is somewhat unique in that the abductee was devoutly religious and seemed to intertwine her abduction experience with archaic symbols of Christianity despite having no knowledge of said symbols.
Hold on a second. Do you mean to tell me that someone who is deeply religious might believe in something that doesn't exist?
Hey.
Is that possible?
Buddy, turn your shade down about six notches.
This is important. For this episode, it's really important for you to open your perspective.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because this is very interesting. Well, we're going to get into what I think, especially with something like this. I mean, we're going to cover this. It's one of the most well-documented abduction cases of all time in terms of the most info from an abductee to come out to record the entire abduction scenario. It's very psychedelic. It's very interesting. And what we're seeing here for me is a perfect example of the psychic/physical nature of the alien problem.
Mm.
And where Betty Andreessen kind of shows, because this is an early on abduction.
Yeah.
This is from the 1960s. So what you're going to find out is that a lot of this is about the question of what is real and what is knowledge, Marcus?
Yeah.
This is a bad, bad first day. When you say alien problem, Henry, are you admitting it's an issue? Do you see the aliens as a problem?
I believe,
As he looks away like me looking at a large pizza.
If aliens are a nuts and bolts scenario, if aliens are on another planet, this is off of me reading the three body problem, the whole dark forest theory, which if you're going to read that, you got to read that to understand where I'm at. First of all, you pieces of shit. To get in a climb into this fucking cockpit, you're going to need a medallion.
Okay.
All right. And so if there are actual aliens on other planets, if they find them, or if we accidentally reach them, if we find them, or if they find us accidentally, we're fucked.
Yeah. Okay.
We're fucked. Whatever they are, they're going to come, they're going to destroy us. But if it's a psychic problem, and in the end, it is really all about knowledge is power. Reading is a rainbow. A book can take you anywhere.
Right.
A pamphlet is your magic carpet.
Okay, very good.
Well, Betty took numerous conventional lie detector tests, as well as some more experimental ones, and she easily passed all of them.
Wow.
But all that proves is that she believes her story.
Right.
Now, but she has quite a few believers on her side, including Raymond Fowler, author of the book The Andreessen Affair, which is the most extensive study on the case. She also has our old friend, Dr. J. Allen Hynek.
Oh. No one wore a Van Dyke better than Ellen DeGeneres.
Yeah, absolutely. Hynek is all over alien lore. Huh?
He is. Well, he's one of the originators.
I see.
Because you may recall Dr. Hynek from our Hudson Valley UFO sightings mm-hmm. episode as the co-author of the book Night Siege. Now remember, Hynek was the real deal. He worked on Project Sign, Project Grudge, and Project Blue Book.
He was the heavy. Yeah. He was the bad guy. The whole point of Dr. J. Allen Hynek on Project Blue Book was like, convince me.
Yeah.
Like, because he was a scientist. His job was to be hired by the government, essentially to say all of this shit is air balloons or swamp gas.
Right.
But after years and years of researching into the problem, which we're going to see happens again and again with a lot of these scientists, mm-hmm. he started getting a lot of doubts. Because it's really just about what are the nature of aliens? What are we looking at? There's something here. Everyone can't always be lying.
So he's sort of an alien deep throat, kind of a whistleblower.
Somewhat.
Sure.
Because he was one of the guys on Project Blue Book, because when they put Project Blue Book back, when they gave Project Blue Book to the government, they said, like, okay, we can explain all these, and all the rest of these we just can't explain. Like, we're not saying they're UFOs, but we're not saying they're aliens, but we can't explain them.
Yeah, so what's the U in UFO fucking stand for? Unidentified. So if it comes down to it, it's like, it's not an identified. We didn't know what it is. That's where the question is. So put your question mark hat on and think about it for a little bit and let it roll around in your brain and make things difficult for you, like it did for me.
And take all of the files that we don't understand and put them under the letter X for some reason. I don't know. I just think it sounds fun. Well, maybe a movie or a show could come along called The X-Files. It'd be kind of cool.
Well, when Hynek finally came to believe in UFOs, he came up with the famous Close Encounters scale, which you can learn all about on our Hudson Valley UFO episode. We went into it pretty extensively. But for this episode, we're going to be focusing on a close encounter of the fourth kind, meaning the person involved was actually abducted by alien beings.
And it sounds like this.
That's
an alien reaching out and touching somebody.
And
the problem is that it normally... God, it's always got to do with the pee-pee and the bajanta.
Well, I don't know. It sounds like that person has the body of Stretch Armstrong, which is not good.
What do you mean?
That's not what humans sound like.
Touch me.
Hold on. All right, I'm touching Henry now. I know it's audio. It actually is what humans sound like. That's incredible.
Well, psychedelic warrior Jacques Vallée expanded upon the fourth encounter scale by adding, quote, cases when witnesses experienced a transformation of their sense of reality, which brings the close encounter scale into the psychedelic realm.
You didn't say it correctly. Technically, it is cases when witnesses experience a transformation of their sense of reality.
Ooh.
That's how he speaks. He's very official sounding. And I guess what, man? Yeah. He's got big, weird hair.
That's cool.
I've been watching a lot of Jacques Vallée footage recently. I haven't really watched him in like, to go. The accent makes him fuckable, but the hair... it's not good.
Yeah.
He's like a cone head of a cone head and a full head of gray hair.
Probably help out a little bit to fit in. He sounds like he loves the white bread, not the crust, liverwurst. You slipe that on there. Little sandwiches. I just see him with a lot of little sandwiches.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, of course.
Well, as Fowler writes in The Andreessen Affair, even though encounters of the fourth kind may be the key to understanding the whole phenomenon of aliens as we know it, close encounters of the fourth kind are, by definition, too weird to be believed.
To be realized.
Wow.
And that's the problem. If you're too weird to be realized, then you are too weird to be written to an academic journal. Which is what they're trying to say, is that there's, because of the nature of close encounters of the fourth kind, nobody wants to really tackle the problem because it's really difficult to get the funding that you need to show up and be like, shit's all fucked up. It's kind of trippy, man. If that's the answer at the end of the months-long research process, right, they don't want to give you money for that.
That's great.
Well, here's the way that Fowler lays it out.
Okay.
Imagine being a bear.
Kissel,
I'm talking to you here.
It's actually not that much of a stretch. Okay, I got it. I was just camping last weekend. Yeah. I did some bear-like activities.
Yeah, imagine you're a bear. You're just hanging out, doing bear stuff.
Cool.
You've never...
little fish there.
Did you shit in a river again? Did Dave Kaler have to hold your hand while you shat in the river?
Did you get like a secret memo? We're not going to discuss what I do in rivers or what I don't do in rivers.
Okay, imagine you're this bear. And you've never had contact with humans. Suddenly, you see this gigantic, deafeningly loud, big black bird in the sky.
Oh, that's my bear impression. Good.
So you feel a slight pinch, and then you pass out.
Oh.
And when you wake up, there's some weird shit attached to your neck, and you got no idea what happened. Now to us, it's obvious that the blackbird was a helicopter, the pinch was a tranquilizer dart, and the weird shit is a tracking collar.
Because we're the people in the big black bird with the tranquilizer darts.
Yeah.
I was actually pretty confused about that. Okay, yeah. Got it.
But try to imagine being a bear and explaining that whole experience to other bears.
Fucked up. Right. It's just guys going...
Yeah. And then they're like...
That's a doubting bear, by the way.
Yeah. And they're like, Timmy the bear, how the hell did you learn how to ride a unicycle? And that's a whole story he's got to explain.
And all of a sudden, you're fired from your bear job of being the honeycomb scratcher. I don't know what bear jobs would be.
That's about right.
But you're fired from that because no one takes you fucking seriously.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone, all the other bears that think you're crazy, such is the nature of a close encounter of the fourth kind.
I see. So this is the equivalent of this woman coming out on a unicycle with a little hat, and everyone's like, why do you look like a circus creature? And she's like, this is the new me.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. But a part of this is, at this point in time, so when we're going to get into this, when Betty Andreessen comes forward and talks about the abduction, this is after there's a little bit of loosening in UFO thought. J. Allen Hynek was one of these people. These are pure nuts and bolts UFO guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
J. Allen Hynek was only interested in sightings and things that could be measured. He wanted evidence. He wanted charring from if a UFO landed. He wanted to see indentations, big on indentations, which shows a lot about their chairs in their homes. Where he's just like, you know, he's just like, you didn't sit in a chair if there's no outline of your butt in it. And that's just because you read a lot, Jay. But he started to open up his mind a little bit. Because Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind, we're going to see, this is kind of where Jacques Vallée and that whole postmodern view of aliens being a psychedelic experience starts coming forward. And this idea that it's not maybe just ships in the sky. It could be something that's a little bit more wiggity than that.
That's interesting. You mentioned chairs and indentations. Camping this weekend, there was a moment where my chair said, I've had enough. And it tapped out. And it just went like into the ground 5 inches. I was sipping a Bud Light. And it was just the 1 ounce that broke the chair's back. It was embarrassing.
You're a step closer to being a ufologist.
Oh, thank you.
Now, even though Hynek was the man who originally brought Betty Andreessen's story to the world, he was not the first person she went to. See, for years, Betty, like many abductees, had only a vague recollection of what she said happened. Mm. Then, in 1974, 7 years after the abduction, she was reading the National Enquirer, back when it was still a fun paper full of Bigfoots and Elvis sightings. Yep. The only time they mentioned the president was to say that he was canoodling with aliens.
And not just people from Croatia.
So Betty's reading the paper when she sees a call for alien abduction stories.
Okay.
So she wrote in with hers, but much to the detriment of the Enquirer, they rejected her story.
It was too weird for the Enquirer?
Well, you're going to hear the nature of the story. It is very strange. And at the very scratch of the surface of her story is pretty ordinary.
Okay.
And I imagine that they were like, oh, we've heard this 1,000 times. And it wasn't until they cracked open Betty Andreessen's mind that they were like, oh, whoa. There's like a whole fucking lore here.
Well, I guarantee you World Weekly News would have picked this up.
Oh, yeah.
World Weekly News.
Weekly World News.
I guarantee you Weekly World News would have picked this up. That was the greatest little like magazine that you would get on the check aisle.
Yeah,
check
out my favorite. No, I wouldn't be sitting here right now if it wasn't for the Weekly World News.
So what are the kids nowadays going to get? Is it us? Is it really this? Is this what they get?
No.
Well, after getting rejected by the National Enquirer, Betty saw an ad in a local paper from none other than J. Allen Hynek. Because Hynek was just posting random ads in local newspapers all over the country on behalf of the Center for UFO Studies, a.k.a. CUFOS.
If you want to get a big abducted fish, you got to put out that proper bait,
mm-hmm.
which is little articles in the classified sections.
Right.
Because if you've been abducted, you're spending a lot of time in the classified sections.
Sure. And what else do fish have? Eggs.
What?
So fish have eggs.
Eggs for scraping.
Oh, I love caviar. When's the last time you've had caviar? I like it more in sushi.
Caviar freaks me out.
I don't like it.
I don't like the way it pops. Uh-uh. It's nasty. I don't like it.
I don't like the little caviars, but I like the ones in sushi, the big ones, so you can really get all that egg juice and it gushes into the back of your throat.
There's a Venn diagram between being really, 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 really rich and extremely poor, where they just both eat disgusting things sometimes.
So Betty, after seeing this ad, she tried again, and Hynek, he is totally upfront in saying that he originally threw her letter in the crank pile.
Well, in his foreword for the Andreessen Affair by Raymond Fowler, he definitely does a whole, like, I didn't believe in her story. I thought she was full of shit. Matter of fact, I thought she was a daffy, loony bitch. I mean, like, he is hard. He's really hard on her.
He's harsh.
I just want to see his crank file. That sounds like an awesome book.
But for some reason, he felt he needed to take another look and decided upon a second reading that at least someone should give this story a shot. So he kicked it on over to MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network.
Yes, and VIP Investigator 27093, that's me.
Okay. And they handed it to their humanoid study group.
I love it.
I can't wait to be a part of one of these study groups, man. I still got to do my shadow hours. Once I get in there, then I can form my own group, the humanoid study group, and it's going to be them studying me.
Once we get done with the book, you can start your shadow hours. We can all get back to our regular scheduled programs.
Thank you.
Very cool.
So finally, in 1977, an official investigation was spearheaded by none other than Jules Valancourt, whose only mention online is his Facebook profile, last updated in 2010, in which the only two posts were about a lake in Massachusetts and an announcement of a new email address.
He was let go.
Very cool.
It's hard.
I knew it was him, though, because the profile picture, the only picture uploaded, was him grinning while holding a sign that said Area 51. He was very happy with it. He was very pleased.
I love our officers of MUFON. I really do, but I do wish they could up the pizzazz, at least make it a little bit more professional. Show the lanyard.
Yeah.
I do wish that there was a movie called or a TV show called Crank Files instead of The X-Files, and it would star Michael Richards and Fran Drescher.
It would
be a different kind of show.
I tell you what, I'd watch that episode, but on the Spice Channel called Crank Files with Fran Drescher. Ooh, she was a looker back then.
I love her voice, and she's very funny.
I love it too.
She ran for governor.
So when the story went to MUFON, it caught the attention of Raymond Fowler.
Okay.
Now, Fowler was actually the one who wrote one of the earliest editions of the MUFON Investigator's Field Manual, a document that I have no doubt, Henry, at this point in your MUFON career, you must have seen the Field Investigator's Manual.
I have it. It's 45 pages long. They sent it to you in a PDF, and then they offer to send you a hard copy. It costs, I think, $15 to get a hard copy. But it's like, but I already have the PDF. And they're like, but what about notes? And I'm like, well, you can make notes in a PDF now. And they're like, what? And I was like, is it still 1985 over there, guys?
It's like, no, man. Look at this, dude. Look at my new glasses they got at Pizza Hut. They're like Back to the Future glasses.
No, they're 3D glasses from 1997.
Oh, okay. Cool.
But even though Fowler was a bigwig at MUFON, he also acted as a scientific associate at CUFOS. And I'll have to admit, like, it's pretty strange to see two UFO organizations working so well together, because usually UFO organizations are notoriously guarded with their cases and can be horribly envious of each other.
Which we saw in our Men in Black episodes, mm-hmm. where they fight all the time. You know what it is that it's the Godfather came in and he deliberated between the clans.
Hynek is the Godfather.
Yes,
in this
Hynek
scenario.
Came in. He was saying, and they're all like sitting in a chair, and it's dark, and it's not because it's mysterious. It's because they did not have the money for the electric bill.
Okay.
And they're sitting in a table. I'm certain it's some form of restaurant where there's a lot of carbs involved. And they fucking just enjoyed themselves. And I, you know what it is? It's because MUFON was taking the abduction cases.
Yeah.
Because Hynek was all about sightings.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yes. And so a part of it was that he let them have it. It was their jurisdiction.
You know, it's always funny when the meetings are like, well, the meeting has got to be between 4 and 5. That is the only hour they have half off apps. And if it goes 1 minute longer, we're not buying anymore. We're not buying it.
There's a lot of half off apps in the world of ufology.
Well, I thought it was the reason why they kind of kicked it over to MUFON was because no one really took Betty Andreessen seriously because there was no evidence besides just her testimony.
Well, they didn't, but they knew that they could get the guy that they needed through MUFON. It's very, you know.
I get it. I get it.
Of course. That's why it went in the crank file.
Yeah, but okay. Nevertheless, Fowler joined Valancourt and Hynek, and the team gained another member. All they needed now was a hypnotist.
I'm a hypnotist. One, two, three. Now you're a chicken. One, two, three. You don't smoke. One, two, three. You're smoking again. Hypnotist has power over everyone.
Mr. Hypnotist, right now I'm currently a smoking chicken. Could you get me out of the chicken or not have me smoke?
First, I'm going to need you to give me five stars of my hypnotist-only app. I'm going to need you to do that, and I'm going to need you to sign up for the mailing list. I'm just going to need you to do that. Don't worry. You're not going to get a lot of spam.
How many times you get the updates? How many emails a week?
2-3 times a day, but it's mostly just you want to be up to date with what I've done to other people. I turn people into lizards. I turn people into eggs.
I actually don't mind being a chicken that smokes.
That's how it always works.
Well, the thing about Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind is that in almost every case, the meat of the experience is either hazy or blocked altogether, with the abductees usually only remembering the beginning and the end. Now, say all you want about hypnotic regression therapy, because admittedly, it did destroy quite a few lives during the Satanic Panic of the 80s and 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. But unfortunately, in the Fourth Kind area, it's pretty much the only tool at the ufologist's disposal.
Okay. This is what we got. Yeah. All right. This is what they have to do. So, a part of this episode, I mean, if you're already listening to this episode, God, you're sexy. Uh-huh. God, you have the tools, what it takes to make it in this world. All right? But the second time, you also have the imagination to maybe allow yourself to believe in this. And it's like, I don't know about the regression. I don't really know.
Yeah.
But what you're going to see in this case is that the shit that pops out of the back of her head, she is either an incredible storyteller or something happened. Mm-hmm. Something like this happened. And so we'll see. Let's ease up. And allow ourselves to believe for a little bit, and then okay. We can go back to your small worlds filled with your taxes and your orthopedic shoes.
Well, if you don't pay taxes, you go to prison like Wesley Snipes.
Then you actually are in a small world.
Yeah, that's the problem.
So the hypnotist the team chose was Harold J. Edelstein, director of the New England Institute of Hypnosis, a.k.a. NAY.
What's an acronym that sounds like a horse queef?
NAY. Well, according to Fowler, as of 1977, Edelstein was one of the few people to have pursued the art of hypnosis as a full-time career.
Yeah, man.
Well, how do you sit your parents down and just be like, that math degree I got, not going to use it.
No, I'll tell you exactly
how you sit hypnotism. Down.
You go like, Mom, Dad, I have something important to say. All right, this is not about my sexuality.
Hey, if you're gay, it's not a problem.
No, this is not about
gay.
My sexuality.
It runs in
I know.
The family.
I'm, thank you.
We've
thank
always
you
thought you were gay.
Follow the jewel.
Oh.
One, two. Oh. Three, deeper, and deeper.
Barb, I think he's gay.
No, deeper.
No, okay.
No. This is not about my sexuality.
Okay.
Follow the jewel. It's on a pendulum.
Okay.
One, two, three. I'm a hypnotist.
Not gay, though, huh? I'm really hoping you were going to be gay.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Well, Edelstein followed the trail that was blazed by the famed Ronald Sprinkle, Ph.D.
He's just...
How does that man not make ice cream?
He wanted to get away from the stigma.
His name is Ronald Sprinkle,
Ph.D. Ronald Sprinkle, Ph.D.
He wanted to be taken serious in a science that he could be taken seriously in with the name Dr. Sprinkle.
Right. Yeah, usually PhD, like in the brain, you're like, okay, an academic, but Ronald Sprinkle PhD, it actually makes him sound more juvenile.
I went to 9 years of ice cream school.
Yeah.
He had to get very serious. That's the opposite. I imagine Ronald Sprinkle would like He'd hit you if you look. If you pushed him, he'd hit you.
A person named Ronald Sprinkle has a very short temper on account of being constantly mocked.
I did some a little bit of research on Ronald Sprinkle, PhD. His professional name is R.L. Sprinkle. but apparently by a lot of accounts, he's like the nicest, kindest man.
He
do
better
anything
be.
For it.
Well, I like him. Well, I'm not going to. Well, thank
he's
you.
A very,
for being a
he's
nice
a
guy.
Very sweet. And that's actually that's the thing about like alien abduction scenarios and people that study aliens. These are very sweet people for the most part. Very few of them are awful.
Okay. You have to be pretty genuine.
Yeah.
That's a part of with me with my UFO stuff. It's out there. I know I'm being vulnerable. I'm hanging my butt out the window for anybody to come and stick their finger up it. When I know for a fact I'm just a man who wants to believe. I'm looking for something, some form of meaning in this on this rock that's circling the blazing sun.
Right. I'm pretty sure that's how Charles Manson got most of his cult members.
Hell yeah, man. I'm on my way.
Exact same thing.
Well, it was Ronald Sprinkle, PhD's assertion that repressed memories of UFO abductions could be brought to the surface by hypnotic regression. Mm. And that's exactly what they did to Betty Andreessen over a 12-month, 14-session ordeal in which investigators say Betty never once contradicted herself despite rigorous cross-examination.
Really?
They do show that in the book very thoroughly. She tells the same story again and again.
Yeah.
So that's a part, that's one, that's one score on the believability scale.
And all the lie detector stuff.
But you also have to have 100% faith that Fowler is not zhuzhing the truth just a little bit.
He could be.
He could be.
But a part of it's a showman.
Yeah.
A part of it, you have to be a showman in order to sell your side of the story. And then again, those who write the books create the reality. Mm-hmm. And in creating a consensus reality, which Jacques Vallée says again and again, he's another doctor who said that, like, again, if everybody believes it to be real, it then becomes real.
Yeah.
We're talking about here the nature of knowledge and reality and what it means to perceive something. And a part of it is that sometimes you got to sell that story, and in a way, you're making it real.
Just feel like Jacques Vallée has uttered the sentence like, you see that as a wooden chair. I see that as a full workout equipment set.
Exactly.
Dude, you can work your triceps, work your biceps.
You see yourself as a woman with clothes on who is not interested in Jacques Vallée, but I will tell you, you are in fact a woman with no clothes on who is absolutely in love with Jacques Vallée.
You got liverwurst all over your face.
So much liverwurst. Sweet liverwurst all over my beard, all over this set of my cheeks.
Man, anything in a French accent just works. Lucky people.
Thanks to HelloFresh for supporting today's episode of Last Podcast on the Left. We've teamed up with HelloFresh, and they're offering everyone in our audience a total of $60 off. That's $20 off each of your first three boxes. Go to HelloFresh.com/last60 and use the code LAST60. That's HelloFresh.com/LAST and the number 60. You know, actually, HelloFresh sent us a box here at the Parks Hidalgo home. Actually, we had a pretty good, damn good time cooking with all their stuff. We had crispy Freco cheeseburgers with caramelized onion jam and roasted broccoli, and they put all the different meals in specific bags, which makes it easier to store for when you're going to cook later on in the week. And plus, we didn't have that old, oh, we got more hamburger buns than hamburgers. So, you don't waste food, and you don't waste money. So let HelloFresh do all the hard work so you can just cook, eat, and enjoy. Go to HelloFresh.com/last60 and use the code LAST60 to get a total of $60 off. That's $20 off each of your first three boxes. That's HelloFresh.com/LAST and the number 60. So before we get to the story itself, let's get to know Betty and the Andreessens just a bit.
Okay.
Betty was a married mother of seven, with kids ranging from 11 to 3, and they all lived in a small town in northern Massachusetts called South Ashburnham.
Can I ask? It's like, it's some weird Massachusetts, because they miss a bunch of letters.
Yeah.
So it's always like South, like, Ashburnham.
Yeah.
Ashburnham. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, someone's going to call, like, someone's going to send us a tweet about how it said some stupid way that we could never have guessed in a million
years.
Can
I just ask, though, is there a North Boston? Everything is South.
No,
I have never heard anything that's ever happened in North Boston.
Yeah, that's like Cambridge and shit. Yeah, that's where
all the colleges are.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, I guess. By the seventh child, do you just like shoot it into a spittoon? Do you just like, do your legs just, you just step into like in a cowboy stance and just let it go like you're letting a Tic Tac out of your butt?
Yeah, and then it spelunks down like Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible. Is that the deal?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Betty was a devoutly religious person of the fundamental Christian variety who believed in a literal interpretation of the Bible. In other words, she wasn't necessarily primed for abstract thinking.
Or is she the most primed for abstract thinking that you actually think this shit? You actually do believe that Jesus created many fish for all the people to have fish and that he went into whale? I don't.
Yeah. It does. You have faith.
Yeah.
Is just no longer critically thinking. So, yes, they do. They do have an alien-like fascination.
But what's weird is
ability. I could see that. I could see that as an extension.
And we're definitely going to get into this much more later on.
Cool.
But her opinion of hypnotism is interesting because she was anti-hypnotism because she thought it was of the devil.
Yeah.
So what's weird, it's also with a weird close-mindedness thing where she believes the Bible and then everything else is either witchcraft or fake.
They're putting cheese in the crust on the Pizza Hut pizzas now.
That's against the law.
That's for the devil.
Yeah, but please, I mean, do not get us wrong. We're not saying she's dumb or lesser than or anything of the sort. Because, you know, she seems like a very nice lady with the best of intentions.
Yes, and if you are religious, that is totally fine.
Yeah, and that's
true. We're doing whatever we can do to survive in this weird little place.
Do whatever the fuck you want to do, man. You know, I sit and I fucking drink scotch, eat dark chocolate, I smoke rip bongs, and I fucking watch horror movies. That's my shit.
Yeah. Yeah. All we're really saying is, like, we're not really sure that Betty has the kind of mind that makes up a story like the one we're about to tell.
Okay.
I make a bunch of stories, man.
I just wish a 17-year-old you could talk to you now and be like, you're doing what? You're doing what I want to do now.
Oh, yeah, dude. Buddy. Yeah, fucking man. Fucking all you got to do is just fucking get it going, dude. And he's like, what do you mean? She's like, 7 years of hard work.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, 7 years of just pure, like, misery.
Yeah.
But then you get whiskey, dark chocolate, and a box.
Yeah, you get. Yeah, I got fucking, you know, all that shit's great.
I think you had some whiskey during that hard work period.
Oh, yeah, but it was Canadian mist.
Yeah. It was Canadian mist that he had to count out change so he could buy said Canadian mist to drink in the morning to get through his temp job.
Yeah.
Normal. Yeah, we won't do a deep dive on that.
I called it work juice. It was really fucked up. It was a dark period in my life.
Sure.
So a couple days before Christmas in 1966.
Wait, so we're getting this going.
Yeah, we're getting this going. Yeah, I mean, this is like this is still a bit of the backstory.
Little bit of the backstory. Just remember this, all right? I'm going to need you to open your perception.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's get it going.
Yeah.
Fucking spark a bell. Fucking get ready to go.
Okay.
Tell your boss to go fuck himself.
Well, don't do that.
Leave your job.
Okay.
And go listen to this in the park.
So a couple days before Christmas in 1966, Betty's husband James had a bad car accident, which put him in traction for months. Mm. Since Betty needed help with the 7 kids, her parents moved in temporarily. Not much is said about Betty's mother, Eva, as she doesn't really play a part in this tale because she wasn't home when it all happened.
Yeah, she was getting plowed by the fire department.
Oh, I don't think that's true. Eva, I haven't heard that name since Wally.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I haven't heard that name since Hitler's fucking wife.
Okay, well, it's a different kind of Eva.
Well, the parent who does play a part in this story is Betty's father.
Okay.
Wayno Aho, who is a Finnish immigrant.
Wayno Aho?
Yeah.
Wayno? Why do we ever shorten that to Wayno is the best?
I think that it must be pronounced like Vano.
Yeah, Vano. Vano. Vano.
I don't know. Finnish, please tell us if we don't know anything about Finnish.
No. So on the evening of January 25th, 1967, the kids were all in the living room with Wayno watching Bozo the Clown on TV while Betty was in the kitchen. Because apparently, I guess Bozo was primetime in those
days.
It was. He was primetime, and he is fucking frightening.
Bozo, I was frightened of Bozo from day one.
I loved Bozo.
You were a big Bozo guy.
Woke up every morning and watched Bozo on WGN before I went to school.
I did emulate the ball game.
Yeah, the grand prize game.
Yeah, the grand prize, yeah.
But it's interesting is that anybody could be Bozo. Bozo was just like an entity.
Yeah.
Like, so anybody could be Bozo. It wasn't just one guy.
Yeah, but it was just one guy.
No.
Well, it was a series of guys on the TV, but they franchised Bozo, so Bozo could
appear anywhere. So literally his spirit, like the Wendigo, could appear anywhere at any time. Anybody could become Bozo.
Bozo was at my Piggly Wiggly, as a matter of fact. I did not know that was not the real Bozo.
No.
But okay.
No, that was just your local Bozo.
Okay.
Then, as they're watching TV, in a snap, The TV blinked out along with the lights. Mm. And as the family prepared for a night in the dark, as those sorts of things used to happen a lot more often than they do now, a pink light came shining in through the kitchen window.
Wow, wow.
And a stillness then settled over the house as if someone had removed the molecules that connect all things.
Yeah, dude, they're watching, they're sitting there, they see this pink light. Everybody freezes. And then Wayno sees what's happening.
Yeah.
Wow. So we have seven children witnesses and Wayno.
Yeah. Betty and Wayno slowly walk to the source of light coming into the kitchen. They looked out the window and they saw four creatures. This is Wayno's account.
These creatures that I saw Susa Vinzo with Betty's house were just like Halloween's freaks. I thought they had put on a funny kind of headdress imitating a moonman. It was funny the way they jumped one after the other, just like Grace Harper's.
Cool.
Yeah. Although when you see the art when the men are all potting the buttocks with each other, dancing and enforcing each other into what I have heard in a certain fixture, it's a daisy chain.
He's finished, you know. It's a different kind of world they live in.
Then, suddenly, the light stopped, the house went black, and the whole family froze in suspended animation. The whole family, that is, except Betty.
Okay.
She watched as the four beings walked through the kitchen door itself without opening it and stood in front of her.
The way she described it was very interesting. They walked single file through the house, and she said the way they did it was like they walked together on a network, and as they came through, they walked in line in a weird syncopation, and she said that it was like watching them all hop. It's very psychedelic.
Yeah.
Interesting. So they walked through the wall in an orderly fashion.
High strangeness.
Yeah. High strangeness.
High strangeness. Okay. And we're about to hear a quote from Betty herself, because we actually have a ton of quotes from Betty, because a lot of the book, The Andreessen Affair, is just transcripts of the hypnotic sessions that she had with the investigators.
Okay.
So this was Betty's first impression upon seeing the beings.
I'm thinking they must be angels because Jesus was able to walk through doors and walls and walk on water. Did you know that?
I did know that.
It must be angels. And scriptures kept coming to my mind where it says, entertain the stranger, for it may be angels unawares.
Okay. What do you feed an angel? I don't even know, but yeah, entertain them.
Well, as Betty described them, these beings were pretty much your standard alien grays.
Oh.
Pear-shaped head, 3 feet tall, black eyes, slits for nostrils in the mouth, shiny dark blue form-fitting uniforms, 3 digits on each hand, and high boots.
Remember this. We have only since, because of pop culture.
Yeah, especially since the 90s.
Yes, that we've made grays nude. Remember this. And most,
what were they wearing before? Flannel?
No. They always wear little jumpsuits.
Shiny, black, dark blue jumpsuits.
Or brown or green, but they're always clothed.
So this woman is like, so this chick is just like, how are four David Bowies in my house?
It's cool as shit. They got little tailors.
Yeah. Oh. But there were a couple of things that set them apart. One, each alien had the insignia of a bird printed on the arm. And two, the beings were not identical to the human eye, as grays usually are.
Well, they had a fucking boss.
Mm-hmm. One of them was a foot taller than the rest. He sat at about 4 feet. And
it's a big thing for them.
How short they were.
No, dude, they're really small.
Yeah, okay, so 4 feet is the
welcome to our planet.
That's racist. That's racist against the grays.
I didn't know they were so short.
But this is why
they were tall grays.
No, well, this is what the boss technically was, the tall gray. That is the one that she speaks to.
So the tall gray is still only 4 feet tall.
Yes. Well, that's a tall gray.
See? It's not a tall human.
No, but this is why they always say that they were like the little people of Irish fame and of fairies and of folklore and the hidden people in Icelandic folklore.
Okay.
Well, the one that was a foot taller from the rest, instead of having two standard alien black eyes, one of his eyes went up quickly into a slit. And he said his name was Quasgar.
It's actually pronounced Quasgar.
Quasgar, okay.
No, Quasgar.
Quasgar.
No, R.
There's no R.
Just Quasgar.
I don't want to be rude to this. Quasgar.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. You're getting your cum scraped. You better be nice to these.
I'd be very nice.
Because they will nick the tip.
I'm sure they would.
Now, you'd think that Betty would be losing her mind at just about this moment, but she said that the aliens, they had kind of an aura of friendliness.
Okay. I think that's why we got as far as we did.
Yeah.
With Betty, she was not afraid.
Yeah.
Because she had this thing in her mind, which is the comfort of faith I've mm-hmm. heard of, mm-hmm. where you sat and you look and these things become angels.
Yeah.
Her first thought, these are angels. And so she was like, what do I do? Oh, God. First impulse. Oh, I got strangers in my house. First of all, am I wearing my proper house dress? Am I wearing my
nice one? Right, of course.
But her first impulse was like, do you want something to eat?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they're just like, why is she putting angel wings on us? What is this, a halo? No, why is she doing this to us?
She just straight up started being like, oh, you want food? Everybody wants food. And she started making food.
I'm not sure if this is recorded or not, but before the episode, Henry said that this woman reminds you of your mother.
Yes.
And now it's all coming together.
Yeah, it all comes together. Because okay. She went to the refrigerator and brought out like a big pile of beef.
And just threw it on a skillet.
Yeah, threw it on a skillet and just started cooking them.
How'd she know my favorite meal is just beef?
But I don't really understand how moms have that. Yeah. It's like, I never have food ready to cook. When I show up in my mom's house, she's just like, my mom literally last time, she's like, I made fresh corned beef. And I was like, how did you just make this for you and dad?
The thing was, when Betty started cooking, not Henry's mom, the aliens told her, quote,
we cannot eat food unless it is burned.
Really?
Yeah, so Betty just rolled with it. She started burning the beef.
Well, yeah, I guess I'm not going to tell you how to do it. I'm not going to say here in America. Oh, this is a beer. Here in America, we like our beef the medium rare, which is if you look at the beef, it's got to have a pink center in the middle of it. And they're like, no, 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 please. We asked for it the way we wanted to have it.
Okay, burned beef.
Yeah.
But all right, so one burn, one for Cosgo. All right.
All right.
But when the smoke started rising from the pan, the aliens started freaking out a little. She misunderstood them. So they said, quote,
but that's not our kind of food. Our food is tried by fire. Knowledge tried by fire. Do you have any food like that?
Oh, they want to go camping.
No, dude. No, they want knowledge.
Knowledge.
Oh,
yeah.
They want knowledge.
Yeah.
That's knowledge. Their burnt. They call knowledge burnt beef.
No,
burnt,
dude.
Give me the burnt beef. And everyone's like, here's actual beef. You're like, no, give me a book.
They want hard won true knowledge to expand their minds. That is all they need. They don't need all
this
paltry calories.
They can walk through doors. What more expansion do they need?
There's much more to life than being able to walk through a door.
I'd love to walk through a door and lose your keys, walk through a door.
You would use it for nefarious purposes as well.
I'd go into the Arby's freezer section. I do a lot of like food digging.
Yes.
For sure.
But a part of it is that it's fucking aliens tripping all the fucking time.
Yeah, man.
I see.
And they fucking need that shit up in their head, man. Last night, I brought some edibles with me. I was fucking popping in. I watched this great show called Thinking Aloud mm-hmm. by a psychiatrist, Rhea Jacques Vallée and Terrence McKenna on. Ooh, that's kind of knowledge, man. If knowledge was food, I was full. But I had a bunch of pizza, so I was also physically very full.
Think aloud, like, take a left, taking a right. Well,
no,
walking
dude,
here.
No, it was a play
here
on
it is. That's
it was
a tree.
It was a
cars
play on words.
By.
No. It was thinking aloud, A L L O W E D. But it sounds like thinking aloud,
yeah.
like you're
it's
saying.
It's a pun.
It's a pun.
Yeah.
Well, everyone knows those are fun. They are.
Well, the statement about needing knowledge tried by fire, food tried by fire. I mean, like, remember, Betty. She's a fundamentalist Christian.
Right.
You know, so she really only heard knowledge tried by fire. So she led them to her living room where her family was still sitting, frozen in suspended animation.
Ooh. Yeah, and it's fucking all your family's frozen like in a fucking Soundgarden video.
Yeah.
She walks in, because you remember too, their reality is now entered our reality. Take all this as if it's actually happening. Their constant tripping universe has just been folded on top of yours. So she's kind of tripping balls.
Yeah.
And she's like, knowledge tried by fire. The one book that could possibly be true 24/7.
She went in and she grabbed her daughter's Bible off of the end table. And she handed it to Quasgar. And in exchange, Quasgar handed her a little blue book.
Ooh.
And this is what Betty said happened next.
The leader put the Bible in his hand, and he waved his hand over it, and other Bibles appeared, thicker
than the original. I'm like, oh,
wow,
that's wonderful. How impressive.
Maybe bigger print.
Then he passed it to those beside him, and they took the books, and each one was spontaneous. They somehow flipped it page by page and looked down. Each page was a pure, luminous white. And I was like, are you sure you don't want beef?
Interesting. Well, you know, they say if aliens came down to Earth, it would destroy religion. But I guess for Betty, it didn't. It added to her religion.
Yeah, she just completely interpreted it as Christianity.
Okay.
Now, it is worth noting at this point that the Andreessens claimed that that Bible that she gave Kwasgaa, which the daughter Becky carried to Sunday school every week, it was a very important book to her.
Mm-hmm.
Never seen again.
Yep.
Ooh.
Now, what's important to know here is that Betty was ultimately not the only person who participated in the hypnosis sessions. Now, even though every other family member wanted no part in any of these hypnosis sessions,
no. As a matter of fact,
any of this investigation.
Her father was like truly mad because he tried to get him involved because he was the one who he saw a bunch of shit and he was like, no, absolutely not.
Well, in fact, he had said for decades, he was like, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea. But then when she started really getting into it, he was like, I wish you never would have gotten into this. Yeah, I remember it. Of course I remember it.
Yeah, it haunts me every fucking day, and I don't want to ever talk about it ever again.
Did the missing Bible correspond at all with the goth phase that her daughter inevitably went through?
Well, Becky went through harder than a goth phase. She went through admitting to be abducted by aliens phase, which makes you something. So Becky came forward and said, I'll also be a part of this because she regained consciousness. So when she showed up, she saw her family frozen. She was like, oh, this is really scary to me. And they're like, no, we can release them at any time. And they released Becky for a second. And she went like, oh, and then they shut her back down.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. And Becky, she was 11 years old at the time. She went through the hypnotic regression. So when they spoke with her, when the hypnotist put her under hypnosis and brought, you know, spoke with her, they spoke to an 11-year-old.
Okay.
Now, Becky said that she remembered being allowed to look at the book and said that the first three pages were, again, luminous white, but all the writing and illustrations were incomprehensible, like the one that was, quote, sort of a wheel, and inside were four things.
Okay.
You know, so she's 11 years old in the hypnotic regression. I know how crazy all this shit sounds. I'm well aware how crazy all this shit sounds. But
11-year-olds think wild stuff. I mean, they're very susceptible to these things.
Yeah, I was a horny little boy.
I'm sure you were. You're a horny old man, too.
Well, finally, though, Betty started to realize the gravity of the situation she and her family were in. She fearfully finally asked the aliens, what do you want? And they told her that they had come to help and asked if she would follow them.
She fucking believed them. That's the one thing I will say about aliens. And when you get really deep into it, it's not even that alien abductions are not even real. You start asking questions and sort of something like, why do we trust the aliens?
Yeah.
Right. You want to ask for a lawyer. Always.
Always. Never speak.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Betty kept asking more questions, but all they would say was, quote,
would you follow us?
So Betty, drawing on her only touchstone, told them that she would follow them if they were of God.
And this is a little thing that I don't know if you guys knew about. As she was following them, she actually passed them. They're like, can you please slow down? We have very short legs. And then it's sort of like when I walk with you, Henry, and everything's a waking nightmare for you.
Yes, and I have to grab on your fanny pack and hold on like you're a giant burro.
Yeah, like I'm the car and you're Marty McFly on a skateboard.
And when she asked them that if they were of God, she said, quote,
if you are here to help and are of God, I would follow. But do not deceive me, aliens.
Okay.
It's just fucking my mother, man. My mom. Being like, oh, how dare you. I only go with members of the clergy. This will believe. Do you go of God? Because you really did believe. They're talking about it. And they're like, yeah.
Yeah.
We're of God. Just
cut to your mother's driveway in Florida. And it's like, yeah, man, the name of our bike group is like God's Army. So like, yeah, totally come on down. She's like, okay.
Okay.
So they kept repeating the follow me phrase. So finally she said yes. She got in a single file line with the aliens. Together, they all glided through the wooden door as if they were on skates, just as the aliens had come inside in the first place.
So Betty was able to go through the door too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, she joined their little conga line.
Again, another comparison of what is the part of the... That is cute though, Marcus. That is very cute. But he's a part of the thing that make up... We're very standard alien scenario so far. She's traveling through solid objects. She is now about to enter a ship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So when they all got to the backyard, she saw your pretty standard oval UFO on struts. And the investigators, they asked Betty, how come nobody in the neighborhood saw it? But apparently, this was an area known for mist and fog. And weather records showed it was indeed a misty, foggy night.
No, man, it's not. The problem is that this, again, this is where you get into wiggity territory. That ship was for Betty and Betty alone. When you show up, every one of these experiences is a handcrafted mixture of some sort of interdimensional, either intelligence, some sort of natural spoke of the universe itself, and you are just the receptor of that spoke, right? And just slip. But that is a tailor-made situation just for you. No one else is going to see that UFO.
Yeah. Mm.
Is it possible that if you actually saw this in real life, you just see this woman walking alone through her yard and then climbing up into the treehouse?
Maybe. Because,
well, what does it look like if you see this?
I don't know. I don't think you can. It's all a dream state.
You can't see it.
Okay. Well, once she was under the ship, Quazga raised his left hand, and Betty and the others were swooped into the ship. And after that, shit started getting real weird for Betty Andreessen.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, one of the many interesting things about this story is Betty's drawings of her experiences, a lot of them done under hypnosis. The drawings, they're very simple, but they're also very clear and very precise. She was able to draw each room that she was taken into in the UFO, and when all the drawings were put together by an engineer, they did indeed coalesce into a reasonable approximation of a ship.
Cool.
I mean, it's not proof, but it's interesting.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Because, again, I don't know if she necessarily had the wherewithal to design this ship before talking to these people.
No. Right. No. Now, when they arrived on the ship, Becky said she felt weightless and icky, and that her hands and legs felt like they were asleep.
Which is very common in UFO scenarios.
And Quazga and the others left the room and left Betty on her own. Eventually, two greys came and guided her to the center of the room, which turned out to be a transport tube leading down into another part of the ship.
Ooh.
And that room seemed to be a decontamination room of sorts.
Okay.
She walked to the center of the room where beams of light were flowing from the ceiling, and when she asked what it was, they said, quote,
"It's just a cleansing thing." They just...
Yeah, that's the actual quote. "It's just a cleansing thing."
Okay.
Well, you have to remember, again, when I had my out-of-body experiences tripping on mushrooms, right? I saw an entity in the back of my mind that tried to explain things to me, right? Yeah, I was tripping fucking balls. I don't know what the hell was going on. But there was a part of it that I can see. It makes a weird sense.
Yeah.
You could see these things. You have Betty. The idea of trying to, like, explain what all this shit is to you, that's a sidebar that we don't got time for.
Right.
Yeah. Like, that's a whole shit. It's a cleansing thing. You're going to get zapped by the sea. It's just what it's going to do. Don't worry about it. Fucking yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, I would love to see you, like, to get out of body, your soul out of body, just the nightmare that it is to slog through all the lard. He's got a little hatch. You'd be like, I want to give you this out of body experience. Currently stuck in the navel.
Fucking dare you to get an out-of-body experience.
Well, the thing about this story, too, is that I do think that having done hallucinogens is very helpful in understanding this story. Like, if you've done hallucinations, like, I think you're a little more like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
And you could talk about it as if we're stupid or crazy. I mean, obviously you can, but obviously. I believe that the psychedelic experiences I've had are just as real as some of the more physical experiences I've had.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You fucking... Doubting Thomases.
I don't think there's a lot of doubting Thomases out there. There's a lot of believing Toms.
No, the cleansing, it didn't hurt, wasn't even hot, but obviously they were getting her ready for something.
Yeah.
Next, they asked her to change into a white one-piece garment.
Nice.
Now, like, this took some convincing, as Betty was a modest woman, but eventually she agreed, and they gave her all the privacy she needed.
Okay, this must be some kind of alien thing. I don't know. I don't like to be rude to other cultures. Except for when Asian people make their food so spicy. Why is it got to be so spicy?
I don't know.
That's my mother.
That is just your mother. Purely your mother, yeah.
Then came what they'd been preparing her for. They led her into a large, brightly lit, domed room with a blocky, flat, silver structure in the middle with controls and buttons and such on the side. And before she could react, she was swept up into the air and was levitated to the table.
Oh, it's like my wedding night. Oh, it's never been so romantic.
Yep. When she landed, she was paralyzed. She could only lay back as the experiments began.
Ooh.
First came the standard needle up the nose.
Of course.
But at the time, this was not standard. This became the standard for abductions.
Yes, okay. Yes. Now, when I say, like, standard and stuff like that, like, this is one of the earliest ones. Like, Betty and Barney Hill was, what, 5 years before this?
Yes. This was Betty and Barney Hill was the other big one. It was really the first massive abduction tale, where this was a follow-up.
And, of course, the needle up the nose was also used to lobotomize all housewives who wanted to leave their husbands in the 1950s.
Yeah, that's how you... Well, think about how medicine used to be. It was just giving women orgasms with machines.
Yeah.
That would have been awesome.
Like, there's a lot of, like, medicine is a history of just, like, with any luck, this'll work. Nah, never mind.
Well, I mean, one interesting thing about the Andreessen Affair, about the book, is that this book was a New York Times bestseller in 1977. Was it 79?
I don't know.
I think it was 79, but either way, late 70s. Okay. This was a New York Times bestseller, so it's a very influential book, extremely influential.
Sure.
1970, god damn it. Okay, so 1978. But this book, you know, when we say standard, like, Henry's very correct in saying that this ship became standard, because before this, the needle up the nose and, you know, the alien, you know, the gray, like, kind of appearance was not common. It wasn't common knowledge.
And were there TV shows or movies that showed him in that way?
Not really. I mean, the big thing about the Betty and Barney Hills, they say that there was an Outer Limits episode on, like, a week before the abduction that, you know, had weird looking aliens on it. But as far as, like, the grays go, the pear-shaped head, the slits and all that, that was not common.
No, that was not common. That got incorporated to pop culture later on. Like, this was at the time, because you remember, a lot of the old aliens were viewed as, they'd have big noses. There was that type of alien, and then there was just the straight up, like, old school shit where it was a man in a weird costume that looked just like a dude who said he was, like, from Venus and always asking, what time is it?
You just described Humphrey Bogart.
Yes.
Well, Betty told investigators while she was under hypnosis that when the needle entered her left nostril, she heard something like a membrane break.
Ooh, that's not good.
Yeah. And the sensation was both of pushing and penetration.
Just so much penetration. Oh, Henry Thomas, I hate it when they do the penetration.
Yeah, I don't think that's good.
Now, another interesting thing about the hypnotism sessions is the two modes that the investigators used in speaking with Betty. In one, Betty was asked to speak as if she was observing, like examining the memory. But in the other mode, she was experiencing the event all over again. So, for example, in the first, Betty would dreamily say, I heard something break like a membrane or a veil or something, pretty calmly. Uh-huh. But in the second, she would say, quote,
Oh, wow. Oh, why do you have to put that up my nose? Oh, Henry Thomas.
And besides the Henry Thomas, that's a direct quote from the transcripts.
Wow.
And since these sessions would sometimes have to end in the middle of a particularly juicy part of the story because Betty would get so worked up, the investigators would get a little antsy to hear the continuation in the next session.
Yeah, so they jump right into the most intense part each time, being like, okay, so the thing's going up your nose. And she's like, whoa! At the very top of it.
Yeah. And this is a direct quote from Raymond Fowler writing in The Andreessen Affair about the next hypnosis session to come after having a stop at the needle in the nose.
Our Saturday hypnosis sessions had by now become quite routine. That day, however, we were so eager to get started that the customary rendezvous at a local pancake house and a drive to Harold's offices seemed like hurdles in a race.
Wait, hold on a second.
You gotta get carved up.
Why? Okay, so they were like, we're gonna go talk about your abduction, but before we do that, there's a double stack over here at IHOP.
You have to do it.
You gotta do. Okay, interesting.
Then what are you gonna do? You're gonna make it through all the state. Those are the kind of sugars your body needs to break down for the long-haul questioning of a woman that is writhing around in a table under your complete control.
Okay.
Today's Last Podcast on the Left is brought to you by Stitch Fix.
Stitch Fix is an online personal styling service that finds and delivers clothes, shoes, and accessories to fit your body, budget, and lifestyle. Just go to stitchfix.com/lastpod and tell them your sizes, what styles you like, and how much you want to spend on each of them. You'll be paired with your very own personal stylist who'll handpick items to send right to your door. Then you try them on, pay only for what you love, and return the rest. Shipping, exchanges, and returns are always free. There's no subscription required. You can sign up to receive scheduled shipments, or you can get your quote-unquote fix whenever you want. Stitch Fix's styling fee is only $20, which is applied towards anything you keep from your shipment. Actually, I've been using Stitch Fix for like a couple of months now. Pretty good. I got some new pants. Had some shorts that I wore during the summer. I hate shopping for clothes. It's the worst thing. But Stitch Fix had some cool stuff. So get started now at stitchfix.com/lastpod, and you'll get an extra 25% off when you keep all the items in your box. That's stitchfix.com/lastpod to get started today. stitchfix.com/lastpod.
So when the hypnotism session began anew, they'd been sitting in anticipation of what would come next, what with the needle up the nose and all.
Sure.
And Betty did not disappoint.
Okay.
She said that when they finally removed the needle, the aliens, there was a little ball attached to the end. Now, this is interesting because the ball wasn't present when the needle went in.
Yeah.
This, of course, suggests this may not have been Betty's first rodeo.
Really?
I remember my first rodeo. It was so dirty. I hated going there. Yeah. I mean, the clowns, they're not funny. They're always putting themselves in danger. Yeah. I'm just like, get out of there, clown.
Right, I totally agree. And then Bozo was just like, this is all the work I can do now. It's very sad.
Kids love me. Worship me.
So now, how big are we talking? Are we talking Schwarzenegger in Total Recall when he dives it up and pulls it out?
The way they describe it is a solid piece of fiber optic material. A very, very thin needle goes up. And then what came out was this little nubbin that seemed to have been up in her nose.
Okay.
And they just said, and they literally said, like, found it.
Yeah. So after the needle in the nose came out, the needle into the belly button went in.
Uh-oh.
Betty said that the nose needle, that just felt, quote-unquote, funny, but the one into the belly button hurt like hell.
Oh, yeah.
Because when they inserted the needle, they just started wiggling it around inside.
And so she started squirming around, but then the aliens, they rubbed their hands all over her, and then she stops hurting anymore.
Okay.
Like masseuses.
Yeah. Good, good.
Now let's hear another quote from the experiencing side while the needle thing was happening.
Oh, he's pushing that again around, feeling things. Oh, I don't like this. Feels like he's going right around my stuff inside, feeling it or something with that needle. He's coming over and oh, and he looks different. He's starting to take the thing out. Oh, 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 oh.
Are you having one?
Oh, I'm having many.
Oh, my.
So, you know, as Henry said, Quasgod started waving his hands over, taking away the pain. And I know that sounds a lot like New Age bullshit, but this is actually a phenomenon that happens a lot in abduction scenarios.
It does, okay. Pretty much in each one.
And in fact, there are over a dozen times in Betty's story when her story matches up with the stories of other CE4s.
Okay.
Thank you for abbreviating it. I actually really appreciate it because it's important to feel like we're doing science.
Close Encounters 4. That's what it means.
Now, we don't really have time to go point by point on all of the similarities, but if you're interested, all of it's laid out in The End, Reason, Affair. And
go read it. It's thick.
Yeah.
You may fall asleep driving while reading it. Well, you shouldn't be reading and driving like I do, but I'm an expert.
Don't read and drive. Get a book on tape or something.
No. I hate listening to voices. It makes me fall asleep.
Mm-hmm. Now, to be totally transparent, Betty herself freely admitted, as far back as her first letter to J. Allen Hynek, that she did read a couple of books and articles on UFOs after her experience.
Okay.
And that could contribute to a phenomenon known as cryptomnesia, which is when the subconscious mind stores information that comes back out as something that we perceive to be a completely original thought or memory.
Sure. Like how Robin Williams did his entire comedy career by sort of accidentally remembering a bunch of other people's material. Yes. And I don't mean to say anything bad against Robin Williams, RIP, but you know, he was very creative.
That was a criticism, yeah.
But according to Fowler, some of the more subtle details in her story match up with unpublished at the time UFO accounts. But infuriatingly, he kept those details confidential so as to not compromise other investigations.
Just fucking tell us.
Of course, that falls under weird patient, weird doctor privilege.
Yes, that's actually a law. But it's true. You know, again, we don't know.
Yeah.
She did maybe incorporate some things. We don't know. We don't know. We have no clue what happened.
So after the needle was removed from Betty's stomach and the results were checked, the aliens got to talking with each other across the room.
Hmm.
And when they came back, they told Betty that some of her parts were missing.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. She had some crucial lady parts gone.
Yeah. She knew immediately what they meant because 3 years before, she'd had a hysterectomy after lucky number 7.
Okay.
Obviously, they've been checking her for fertility.
Oh.
Or, as they put it, procreation.
Yeah, making suck. They went in, apparently, what we're going to find out, as it always is, what's the point of abduction? People ask this all the time. And it seems to be the common source and the output of abduction is supposed to be the hybrid program.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But, you know, they continued anyway, and for the big finale, they lowered what Betty called a big eye thing that looked her up and down for a bit, then raised back up. After that, she was levitated across the room to the aliens and stood with them.
Every time she gets levitated, imagine she's just like, oh, this is fun. I haven't had this much fun. I almost went in a hot air balloon ride, but my husband died.
Oh, that's sad.
They then left the room altogether, and Betty changed back into her regular clothes. Now, this is where not all, but a lot of abduction scenarios end.
Yeah. Normally, they get picked up, they get fucking scooped, they get poked, and then they catch and release.
Yeah. It's like remember Travis Walton with Fire in the Sky?
Sure.
His whole abduction experience was just experimentation.
Now, it's done basically here.
Yeah.
This is not.
No, not now. Not this story.
No.
But the Andreessen abduction is one of the few in which the abductee was taken into... kind of sounds like an hallucinatory world. Like, it's just mind-boggling what this woman saw. And Betty, I mean, she barely had the words to describe it, but she tried her best.
It's like when you're fighting Scorpion in the new Spider-Man video game and he makes you hallucinate.
Sure.
It's an incredible game.
It's so good. Wow, you're pretty far into it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I hate things about boys. I don't like that Spider-Man's
He's older. He's older. We talked about this on Side Stories. He's older in this.
Yeah, he's in his mid-20s or so. Yeah.
That's fine, then.
Yes, it's fine.
And really, the thing is about this, even though Betty's experience is much weirder and more abstract than, say, the supposed abduction of Albert Bender from our Men in Black episodes, for some reason, I actually find the more abstract experiences more believable.
Hmm.
Between Jacques Vallée and Terrence McKenna, they have a series of thought. And Carl Jung actually wrote a book on UFOs that I'm going to be getting into soon. And they talk about this as a... there's a folklore aspect to the alien experience. They're part of what she will now experience is something to me, in my mind, is a series of riddles that she is supposed to figure out. Terrence McKenna has a quote about UFOs that I find that are very interesting. UFOs are a subconscious obstacle to science. It is a purposely created phenomena by our subconscious to turn us away from the rational towards the intuitive, which essentially means... experiences like Betty's are supposed to be indicative and then go of this concept of like, we want everything to be concrete facts. We want everything to be like touchable. Like, I can touch it with my hands. It's right here. It's provable. It's right here. Kissel's got big throbbing weird veins all over his legs, right?
That's provable. Yeah.
I can feel them. I squish them in there. Each one's a different bullet towards your death.
Yep.
Right? But I know that they can, so I know this is real, but I know that somewhere, that there's supposed to be another experience outside of this.
Yeah.
What UFOs in the alien scenario and the abduction scenario specifically are supposed to be a thing that's supposed to jog us out and remember, things are not always so fucking cut and dry.
Mm-hmm. Interesting you mentioned that. My right leg, that's the one with blood clots, and I envision it in my mind as a shotgun. And it's leaning upwards.
Cool.
Yeah, isn't that sad?
So let's get it a little bit.
Yeah.
Hey, that's doctor. That's what the doctor said, so.
So let's get into it. After getting dressed, Betty was taken to a room with 4 clear glass or plastic chairs. She couldn't quite tell which one.
Okay.
She sat down, a transparent enclosure enveloped her body, and the aliens told her she was about to be immersed in liquid.
You know that these guys were like, they got the Bible, and they're like, this fucking bitch, she's fucking good. She gave us all the shit. She'd be like, we're getting her the fucking goo chair, dude.
Oh my
goodness. She's getting the goo chair, bro.
I mean, there's a big difference if they're plastic or a really nice glass chair. That's Like, are they Walmart aliens? Or are they like really high end?
Macy's
aliens. Yeah, I want a Macy's alien.
They keep ushering her into these other rooms, and the UFO's looking. It wasn't that big from the outside. They're put into this other place. It was this area. It had a circular table and two, what I would say, it looked like movie theater seat rows that are very interesting, shaped for humans. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not like he brought up interesting in the books. Like, they're not, it's not for them. It is for people. She sat down in it, and then this cover that was glass hinged and fitted on top of her body, then sucked in to what was like completely up against her skin and started filling with goo.
Yeah.
So they're, so she's there in a wooden chair, in a plastic chair, and they're like, okay, come in, aliens. And then all the aliens are like, doot, doot, doot. And then they look at the chair and they're like, God, and then you try to climb it like a mountain. And then they can finally, and then maybe the aliens are like, could we get alien chairs?
I mean,
why do we have the human chairs?
Well, this is maybe they have specific ships. Mm-hmm. Maybe they have, maybe in their world there are places there for aliens, and this is a place that's for humans.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So after the enclosure came down, tubes connected into her mouth and nose so she can breathe. Ooh. As the fluid came from above. It was like a grayish stuff. Ooh. Started to trickle at first, and then eventually it became a torrent.
Just my mom all covered in goo.
And the entire chair then began to vibrate.
Oh,
and then her body sat in perfect resonance with the fluid.
Oh.
Cool.
Then a thick syrup started flowing through her mouth tube.
Uh-oh.
And this was Betty's reaction.
Oh, God. It's about a spoonful or so, and they're giving me through the tube, and oh, it tastes sweet. Oh, it tastes good. Oh.
Maybe she was just remembering eating at the pancake house right before.
But then it gets relaxing.
Oh, I see.
So it's all filling with her mouth. This feels good. Oh, so relaxing. And it tasted good. It was so sweet and thick, sort of like a cough syrup. I'll stay in the chair.
Yeah, it doesn't sound that bad.
It was theorized that the purpose behind this action was to protect Betty against the rigors of either space or interdimensional travel.
Who knows? Or it was just to cover some lady in goo.
Maybe.
And that if she hadn't been protected, she might have died, which I'd imagine was something that the aliens learned through trial and error.
Yeah, wow. Where they just got smashed up against the side of the fucking UFO. Just like
turn inside out.
Another oopsie.
Yeah, so
what will
like...
we tell the president now that we've taken his daughter?
So they're like, again, with any luck, Aunt Jemima should work.
Yeah.
And then they just filled her with syrup.
But maybe that's the reason why they normally don't, they don't take, like, because I think a lot of people are like, an alien abduction's real, and you really want to send a message to America, wouldn't they take the president? But you know what it is? You can't take somebody so high profile if you're going to just accidentally fucking kill them by accident by not filling the tubes, right? You got to take people that could maybe go missing.
I don't want to be like, you know, I don't want to dig into your accent there, but I think that voice that you just did is the person telling you that aliens are real.
No,
I would be like, well, if they were real, wouldn't they just take the president?
No, I hear it as a, yeah, if aliens wouldn't it maybe think,
maybe you could believe in aliens, but also, why don't I just go ahead and believe in God, then.
And just like,
excuse me, but I, it's my time of day when I have to go trade a couple of Bitcoin shares. So just, you can just wait for a second, and then I'll come back and then we'll talk about it.
I hope you cashed out of your Bitcoin. If you haven't yet, it's going down.
I'll tell you what, though, when I'm talking about aliens, it's like, hey, thank you for joining me. You want an espresso? You want some wine? Very good. Let me tell you all about my pandemic theory of alien culture.
I'll take some whiskey instead.
So after what Betty perceived to be a relatively short period of time, the fluid drained, the enclosure opened, and Betty opened her eyes to see that the figures who had abducted her were now wearing black hoods.
Very strange, very intense. Yeah. And also, it was weird for her to be like, and my clothes were so wet, and I'm sitting in that cold area, and they go, and I was like, will I dry? And they're like, oh, you will dry eventually. And she's just like, oh, but my boobies.
They have all this technology, and they don't have a dryer?
Well, eventually, she does get miraculously dry.
Yeah.
Okay, because they're air drying out of all of this stuff, like, just go to a freaking Sears.
I just
get
don't
want to
see my mom all wet.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, wet with goo.
Ugh, so she's all sticky and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Nasty.
Mm. Well, again, they asked her to follow. They traveled by floating above a small black track that was only about 4 feet wide through a tunnel that looked as if it had been chipped out of stone, passing openings for intersecting tunnels along the path. Suddenly, the track slanted upward, and Betty saw a shiny, mirror-like obstruction ahead, which actually sounded to me a lot like the magic mirror substance in The Invisibles, which represents both God trapped in his own creation and an entrance into other dimensions.
Now,
fuck yeah, dude. I will say the graphic novel The Invisibles must have been pretty easy to illustrate. Because, you know, they're invisible.
You never do the reading.
No, I...
And it's a comic book.
No, please. I know. Yeah. I know what it is. No, actually, I know. I don't even know who. I know who made it.
Who?
Ennis.
No.
No.
Garth Ennis.
No, that was. He did Preacher.
I love Preacher. I love Preacher.
Which is great. Fucking love.
No, I do know. I do know who did the Invisibles.
Who did it?
It is
Bald Man. Scottish. Wears sunglasses a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, Bono. It was Bono. I'm pretty sure.
Honestly, close.
No. No.
Yeah,
no,
don't do that.
No. No, do you want me to compare Jacques Vallée to, Gerard Depardieu?
I literally will toss this table over.
Exactly. It was Grant Morrison.
That's correct.
Well, soon they passed through the magic mirror substance, and Betty was met with a world defined by an all-encompassing, vibrating red light.
Mm.
Everything, as far as the eyes could see, from the sky to the ground, was red. This is when she saw her first structures.
Oh.
Now, at first, they looked like nothing more than nondescript square buildings. But as she got closer, she saw that some of the buildings were occupied, at least on the outside. This is what she said.
There was land, and there were buildings. But there were no vegetable life, just land and buildings. And now we are passing, oh boy, we're coming to where there's some beings.
Direct quote.
And these beings are, they got two eyeballs, and they got loads of them. Oh, they're scary. And they have skinny arms and legs and kind of a full body, and their eyes can move every which way, and they can just climb just like monkeys, and they can climb up quickly and swiftly down and around and in and out of windows. They're all over the place.
And then she saw a sign that said, "Welcome to Nebraska."
She saw space lemurs.
Yeah, space lemurs. Yeah. Betty said the beings had two huge eyes that bibbled and bobbled on stalks where their head should have been, and the two eyes moved independently of each other.
Yeah, it's cute.
Ooh. Yeah.
But she said she was also very scared of them.
Yeah, she was terrified of them because they're
they're
space lemurs with gigantic eyes with no head.
Yeah, you're a woman who's never seen any of this shit.
Yeah.
Probably is very scared by even just the idea of UFOs on the fucking television screen. All of a sudden, you've just been slicked with goo.
Right.
You're on a conveyor belt. You're taken to a place where the aliens are scared of the red light. They're wearing now, already creepy, but now they're wearing black hoods, making you follow them through this area where there's space lemurs, and you are just trying not to, like, start punching people.
Right. I will say the space lemurs sound like they would be great characters in that wonderful animated series. Ah! Real Monsters.
Yeah. What was it? Crumb?
Yeah.
The one he had to yell
his eyes.
Had to hold his eyes.
Pain in the ass.
Yeah, it is, man. You drop them, you're blind, you can't see what you're ordering off of Seamless.
Well, she said when they went by the space lemurs, they stared at them, but otherwise they didn't really react. They then came to another reflective silver portal, and when they passed through that one, they were met with a green world.
Ooh.
She said, quote,
"It's beautiful here. Oh, it's so beautiful here. Have you ever been to the French resort in Disney?"
I've never been to Disney.
It is just scrumptious. Spare no attention to detail.
Really?
And we're still along the thing. And now that we are in the green atmosphere, they're taking off those black hoods. And I was like, oh, that must have been so hot. And going along, and it seems like mist or sea or something off to the side there. Beautiful. And we're like on a narrow, narrow passage of land, and we're gliding across it, and off to the side, Henry Thomas, I see, I don't know if they're fish or what. It looks like a combination of a fish and a bird. And it seems like it's a haze all over and fog, and yet it's so light I can see it. And we were going someplace.
Okay, so she's seen a bunch of furbs. So
she's, you know,
good.
This is
a
like if you drop my mom into a J.G. Ballard scenario where it's just like so otherworldly. Like this is just it's not just normal weird.
Yeah.
It's like extra weird. So yeah, it's weird. I can't imagine my mom, who just discovered lemon drops, the cocktail.
Oh,
all of
really?
A sudden, you're dropping her off in this fucking place. I'm like, she's got to always be like, oh, that's...
Oh, you know Henry Thomas in UFOs, they have red and green worlds. So you'd be like, I know, Mom, you've told me five times.
Wow.
And that's about the time they flew over a pyramid.
Fuck yeah! Oh.
The one Betty saw had a head on top, but even though she said it looked vaguely Egyptian, it wasn't familiar. Hmm. This is how she described it.
It was just a regular head. It wasn't fat, like the Sphinx. The Sphinx had a big fat face. This had 11 cheeks, but it looked sort of feminine, yet male.
It sounds like my mom trying to describe everyone in Brooklyn.
Yeah, exactly.
And she saw other structures as well. She saw a large city in the distance with buildings and bridges and all that, but she couldn't make out anything else. Hmm. Everything was just green until she came to the crystals. And I know crystals, that's a word that people, including me, usually tap out on crystals.
Why? Yeah, what's wrong with crystals?
Crystals are a pain in the ass.
What do you mean they're a pain in the ass? It's a crystal.
It's crystal. I mean, it's like, if you know, we didn't get to go to what is it? Sedona, Arizona. Yeah. It's an entire economy based on crystals.
Sonoma's a car.
Yeah.
Sonoma is a car.
And it's also in California.
There's a player, if you watch Hard Knocks, the Cleveland Browns, they won against the Jets. They're 1-1-1. They got all the brackets filled.
Okay.
Fun. Anyway.
This is how I feel. You must feel about the alien stuff.
They beat the Jets. But he made the team, and he was a big believer in crystals, and he said that they really helped him.
Yeah. I do believe, again, whatever you believe in, that's the chaos magic of it. If it works for you, great. Good work. Whatever keys you into the subconscious enough, whatever puts you in a trance state, great. But crystals, for the large part, are, you can get them at Michael's.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and people, they tend to, it's a very big, like, scammy type of thing.
It can be. But it's all about, again, the genuineness of the entire situation. So if you really do, I don't want to malign crystal owners because I have crystals in my own home.
Yeah, sure. We all got crystals in our home.
Yeah, it's fun to look at the sun through them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Prisms.
Yeah.
But what came next is actually very interesting in a psychedelic sense.
Ooh.
Betty said when she came to that point, a blazing light appeared, and slowly from that light, a gigantic bird materialized. And as she approached the bird, Betty got hot, painfully hot, as if she were entering an oven on full blast.
Uh-oh.
The bird, she said, looked like an eagle with a white head and tiny gold specks floating around her.
And they're all like, fucking check out our fucking bird, dude.
Yeah,
fucking
cool.
Check
bird.
It out. You got covered in goo, bitch. Have you seen a fucking bird? You're getting the full treatment, girl.
And suddenly, a white light engulfed the bird, brighter than before. And when the light abated, nothing was left but a small fire and a pile of gray ashes.
I wish we could get an echo effect where it's like a multiple cause.
And she finally found the food they love.
Actually, Henry, if you want to do that one more time, I can do that. All right, do it. And our listeners would have really enjoyed what I just did.
Great.
From the ashes rose a big, fat, gray worm.
Whoa. It's cool.
Could you not call me fat? I know I have a bit of a worm weight problem, but
actually, it's thick. THRCC. And I celebrate that because guess what? I can eat what I want. I can live how I want. And that's how it is because it's my world. You're just living in it.
I agree.
At that moment, a booming disembodied voice started speaking to Betty. The voice, whom Betty came to call the One, told her that he had chosen her to show the world. She asked if he was the Lord God, to which he cryptically replied,
I shall show you as time goes by.
If God is a huge worm, I am going to be real,
no,
man.
No. The word God was not the worm.
God is not the worm.
I'll explain the worm in a bit.
Okay.
You don't know, man. You've never read Book 4 of Dune, man.
Right, that's true.
Now, Betty proclaimed her faith through all manner of praise gods and praise Jesuses, but the being, the One, didn't really say anything overtly religious.
He judoed it.
Yeah.
She sat there and he, so that we're saying in the regressions, in this, she starts, tears are streaming down her face and she's going, praise Jesus Christ, and all, like, she's going nuts.
Yeah.
Right.
And what they're saying is that what it seems to be is the aliens kind of were like, yeah. Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah.
I see. And they just rolled with it.
Yeah. And the whole thing could easily be interpreted as Christian by someone who wants the experience to be religious,
sure.
Which is part of what makes this case so fascinating.
Because she was genuine. This is not a bit. Like, yeah. She believed she was talking to angels, messengers, and that's a part of why this, in the end, will change her whole life.
Yeah. And she never uses her experience as, you know, proof of God's existence, because for Betty, the existence of God, it's not a matter, there's no question about it. It's right. A matter of fact. And she doesn't need to prove it to any of us, because one, she's not a dick about her faith, and two, questions of existence just don't enter her mind.
Mm-hmm. That must be nice.
Mm-hmm. That must be really nice, of course, to be so sure of something.
Just for of one thing in your life.
I'm not even sure, like, sure what my hair color is.
Honestly, I couldn't tell. I couldn't
right
tell
now.
You know, there's a lot of discrepancy about my height.
There is not a lot of discrepancy. The only discrepancy is between you and your IMDb page. You're 5'5".
Guess what, man? Perception is reality.
Whatever Betty Andreessen had, whether it was quote-unquote real or completely psychedelic in nature, it got filtered through the lens of Christianity so easily that really, I mean, you wonder if this whole thing was custom-made. Hmm. I mean, the most telling is this line right here.
I can release you, but you must release yourself of that fear through my son.
That's the whole thing. My son.
Interesting.
So that just, you know, plugs right into the Jesus talk.
But dude knew what to do.
Yeah.
Like, because again, I think it's about, it's taking something, obviously this shit is in some way, shape, or form is happening in her mind.
Yes.
So whatever is happening, he is pulling the stuff that is most dear to her. And I think a part of it is that because of her genuineness to believe, which is the reason why right. She got led on this. If this is real, again, at this point, we're just positing that this shit happens,
yeah.
Right? Because this is where we're at in the episode. But it's like Travis Walton, the whole time, he's going, nah, 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 every other person, Betty Hill, Barney Hill, nah, nah, they're fighting them at all times. And so, yeah, they drop him off. She was just like, oh, this is beautiful.
Right.
And they're like, we'll give her the whole fucking tour. Let's get her, you do
absolutely.
All this shit.
And we're going to treat her so well, we're going to play a little hit from the great musician Carmen. And we're also going to play a little DC Talk when we try to get a little crazy.
What's Carmen?
That's a Christian singer who was very popular, and DC Talk is a Christian.
Why don't we just, let's just mention Jars of Clay and complete the
Jars
trifecta.
Jars of Clay went mainstream.
They went mainstream.
My church growing up, they were quite upset with Jars of Clay and Amy Grant.
Yeah.
Because that song, Baby Baby, wasn't about an actual baby. It was about a boyfriend.
Now, you might say that Betty's interpreting all this through the lens of Christianity because that's what her subconscious mind is feeding her when she's under hypnosis, which is a fair assumption. However, what's most interesting here is the bird.
Yes.
Now, for those of you who know your mythological animals, it was obviously a phoenix, i.e. a bird that dies in flames and is reborn from the ashes. Even the gray worm is a part of the phoenix mythology going back millennia.
Okay. Isn't that interesting? It is. It's like I didn't know that until I read about that, but the phoenixes are, they turn into a little baby worm.
Yeah.
Huh.
But what you may not know, and what I didn't know, and it's almost certain that Betty didn't know, was that the phoenix was actually quite prominent in early Christian art and literature as a symbol of immortality and resurrection. In fact, the phoenix was sometimes interchangeable with Jesus Christ in the early days when Christians were just kind of making shit up as they went along to see what stuck.
You got to. That's how a brand starts.
Yeah. Yeah, you just make shit up until finally people glom onto something. You're like, whoo! All right.
Yeah, it's called putting out a show a week for 7 years.
Yeah. I mean, do you want the ascension to look like Chris Angel pulling off a stunt, or do you want it to look like a phoenix running towards the sun?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, hell, and they were still making shit. I mean, it took them, what, 1,700 years to really nail down the devil?
Right.
Like, yeah, man. And now, and they still haven't nailed down the devil.
Yeah.
All right, because the devil, because then Anton LaVey came and redid the whole fucking thing.
Yeah. Well, furthermore, Betty's bird gave off the scent of frankincense and myrrh when it exploded. And that little tidbit about the phoenix was actually around long before the Magi supposedly brought those spices to the birth of Jesus.
Right.
Now, again, this could be cryptomnesia. But you got to remember, Betty told her story in 1977. I was able to gain all of that knowledge after about 10 minutes of Googling. The history of the world is at our fingertips now.
Right.
Betty's not going to run across this shit on Wikipedia.
No, you'd have to go look for this shit. You'd have to know this. You have to be a you'd have to be a semi scholar on ancient Christian behavior.
Right, and she's raising seven kids. Probably doesn't have all the time in the world to do the research that that you specifically Marcus. She doesn't have 40 hours a week to do research, and you almost need it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is archaic scholarly knowledge. Hmm. And Betty was a fundamentalist Christian, and while she did spend a lot of time in church, she wasn't really surrounded by fucking theologians discussing the early lesser-known symbols of Christianity.
She should have been. But you know what? But a part of it is the Jungian interpretation of all this.
Yes.
Is that in some
Which
way...
Which is what I'm more all about.
I think it's very interesting. There is an archetypical... There's something fucking in her brain. They just pulled it out.
Yeah.
And they just... Because that's like when you go and you trip balls and you see the fucking Aztec lines and you see all that weird imagery and we all see the same shit. That's a part of what she is in some way, shape, or form plugged into something like the public unconscious. What is it? The collective unconscious.
Sure. I mean, this sort of thing, like, it doesn't prove anything because by its very nature, all of this is unprovable.
It's what it's about, though. It's not about proving everything.
She did go to a very Christian church in Boston. So,
Northern Massachusetts.
In Northern Massachusetts. So every single ceremony, every single church service ended with, and now kneel. We will pray for the Boston Celtics, and then they would pray to beat the Knicks, who were actually good in the 70s, and it was difficult for them to pull it off.
Yeah, but the connection and the possibility that this is all, like, still bumping around the collective unconsciousness, like, thousands of years later, like, it's definitely interesting, but at the very least, it's just fun to fucking think about.
It's nice to think about something that's nice.
It's nice to think about something besides just fucking murder and the horrible problems of the world. It's nice to think about other things.
This is the most serene abduction story we've ever covered.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is a nice little break.
It is. Yeah, it's nice, especially after, the fucking Donner Party that we just went through, and some of the shit that we got coming up in the future, which is going to be, Halloween's going to be a month of
Guys, we're going fucking real dark for Halloween. I'm very excited.
All right.
Yeah. And so after the experience with the bird and the one, Betty was taken back through the path from whence she came, back to the starship, and was once again placed in the transport chair.
Which is really interesting, because when she came back, she really did go through, she hit all the same points again, which is like a weird, she somehow kept the structure going of the ship in her mind.
So they were like, put this strap on, she's like, I know how to do it, I've been here.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but this time, the feel-good syrup seemed to have a little more kick than the first time. This is what she said about it.
Oh, that feels good. That feels real good. They're putting all that stuff all in it. It's getting, I'm breathing through the tube. It feels good. And they're putting that, it's like a whirlpool on. Oh, this is so good. This is so nice. You've ever had, what they do? The twice baked potatoes at Applebee's. It's decadent, and I'm laying bad when I have it, but it's so nice to have it so good.
Yeah.
It feels good and smooth. It's sweet, like a syrup. But it doesn't make me feel sick, because usually syrups, they make me feel sick if I have too thick a syrup on a pancake or something.
That last line was a direct quote.
Really?
Yeah. Syrups usually make her feel sick, like too thick a syrup on pancakes.
Of course. Maybe they switched it up to a boysenberry or a raspberry syrup, something like that. Maybe even a marmalade.
Mm-hmm. Well, finally,
let's pee in it, dude. Let's fucking piss in it, dude.
The way you said maybe even a marmalade is just like so full of like whimsy. Maybe it was even a marmalade.
Maybe it was. Have you been watching Great British Bake Off?
No. Oh, that show is great. They're too nice to each other, but that's fine.
Well, finally, Betty was on her way back home to Massachusetts. But before she left the ship, she had to say goodbye to Quasgar. He reached up and put his hands on her shoulders.
Which is difficult. It's like when me and Natalie's first dance at our wedding.
He looked her in the eyes and he said, quote,
"Child, you must forget for a while."
Then two feeler-type things came out of his head above his eyes, kind of like a bee. And he looked like a bee, but like he wasn't. But admittedly, like, this is when the story goes from, like, interesting psychedelic experience to tedious dream explaining, which nobody likes.
It goes even more so than when we've done.
I see.
Yeah, we're giving you the cliff notes on this part.
So we're in, like, the first half of the book, now.
Yeah. Okay. But Quasgar, after turning into the bee thing, told her he was going to, quote, give her formulas, and that love is the answer, and we're all going to destroy each other if we don't change our ways, and they have wonderful things to show us. If we do change our ways, et cetera, et cetera. It's the same shit most aliens tell us.
They're not going to do anything. I have a full-on... I believe they are interdimensional creatures, that they are using us for a hybrid program, maybe, but a part of it is like, they're just saying this shit because they always say this shit. It's in the script.
No, yeah.
They come in, they're like, and don't worry, yeah, all of this was for a purpose. Yeah, and we're going to save humankind, where they're just getting them sweet, sweet eggs.
Yeah, so I think they're just trying to, like, make sure we don't all kill each other, because if we kill each other, that egg farm is closed for business.
Yeah, dude, no. Gotta get them eggs, gotta get them cums.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then, when Kwasga's face changed back, the door opened and Betty was led back into her house by three aliens. Now, it was impossible to tell if these were the same three that grabbed her, but this time, one of them told her his name. He was called Jewhop.
Hey, what's going on, Jewhop? Nice to meet you, buddy.
Cool, man.
So when Jewhop and the others took her inside, Betty found that her family was still in a state of suspended animation.
Really?
They briefly let her father, Wayno, move for reasons unknown, but everyone else was still frozen.
And it's the same fucked up shit. They wake him up, and the guy goes like, oh! And then they put him back to sleep. He's like, do you want us to do this to the family?
Hey, aliens, could I just move a little bit? My underwear, it's just right up in there. And I just thank you.
So Jewhop took Betty upstairs and tucked her in, telling her that she must forget everything she was told until the time appointed.
Oh.
And when Betty awoke the next morning, she said she felt great, and she cooked the whole family a big pancake breakfast.
See, that's nice. See, that's what moms do. Moms, because being a mother's a job 24/7.
Yeah. It is.
But you know what it is that, like, she said she woke up and heard the whole sound of the house being all, like everybody's, like, playing and laughing and having a nice time, and no one really wants to talk about, like no one knows what happens except for the father.
Yeah.
And, like, she was like, do you remember, like, a thing coming to the house last night? And he's like, nope.
No can do.
Nope.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
And this is a couple days before Christmas.
This was January 20th.
Okay.
Yeah, the car accident happened a couple days before Christmas.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's not quite the end of the story.
It doesn't end with pancakes, huh?
Nope.
No, we wish.
We wish.
Yeah.
A part of the story comes from the hypnotism sessions themselves. Now, after the investigators had gone through the nuts and bolts of the story, they figured they'd go a little deeper to see if they could glean some knowledge about the aliens themselves.
Deeper. Deeper and deeper. Deeper.
Scary.
When they asked if Jewhop or Kwasga had given her any predictions for the future, she said yes. But Fowler wrote that after she responded in the affirmative, something or someone appeared to take control of her speech. Then it seemed as if either the aliens or Betty's inborn fundamentalist faith truly took over, because Betty started speaking a strange language, which could also just be the whole speaking in tongues thing. I don't know if she was from a speaking in tongues church. I don't think she was.
Oh, of course. She's evangelical.
Oh, no,
she's
not an evangelical. She's fundamentalist, which is different.
Probably is.
Fundamentalist doesn't necessarily mean speaking in tongues.
She loses it, whatever it is, because she's in the thing. She appears to have her body taken over, because every single time they're trying to get when they were trying to ask her, like, what did the book say? Because she still had the book for a number of days. They were going to allow her to look through the book.
Okay.
And so she had this book, and as she was trying to go through it, her whole body, she's like, oh, the pins and needles are coming. Oh, my hands feel so heavy. My hands and legs feel heavy.
Huh. Yeah. And this is Fowler's direct phonetic interpretation of what Betty said.
Oh, tuk fira bo fifata na wibala twif dufa ma huf difi okta difaktin. I don't know how they wrote all this down. They figured all the letters in it. Now laha twihira ho ho. Mary Koto, Truha, Etra, Mi Hokofti, Tra, Etra Dindra, Fikralal.
Man.
Woo! Base 32. Base 32, signal base 32.
Yeah. Base 32, base 32, signal base 32. I mean, it does have the what is it, the speaking in tongues feature of always putting ah at the end of it. Shambala, kapala, kipita,
sembala, barabha, tikapita, barabha. You guys all did it better than I did in
you couldn't do it, right?
I couldn't do it. I'm not good at improv. I don't. It was not. I hate nonsense.
Yeah.
That's my whole life.
And with Betty, like, that's what, after that came more weird nonsense. Words like curvature and sombleado and star CISO just start tumbling out of Betty's mouth. But I mean, if you think about it, you know, from the collective unconsciousness perspective, she kind of seemed to be just bobbing in and out of different consciousnesses.
Yeah, she was being fucking weird.
Yeah. Here's another one.
Circle the plane. P-L-A-N-E.
I-N. Oh, count three and four. Count three and four. Counting three and four is very important. Counting three and four and a one, two, three. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. I got a five through eight. That's four after four.
Ma'am, are you going to order pancakes? Or why am I standing here?
Well, after that, the supposed aliens talked for a bit, but all that came was a bunch of vague alien bullshit doublespeak that always comes under these circumstances.
Mm.
But there were some interesting nuggets. What I think is most interesting is when the investigators asked where the aliens had actually taken Betty. They said it was not a planet, but a place.
Hmm.
And furthermore, Betty was supposedly only gone for a night. These two things imply interdimensional travel rather than interplanetary, which I know is something that Henry is quite interested in. I'm quite interested in it as well.
Well, sure. Again, about the essential nature of the psychedelic experience of the alien abduction. If all of the, to me, this is just such an example of like, she got showed these gigantic capital S symbols. These are very like what the hell is all this supposed to mean? Like what is she trapped in? And it's not about that she went to fucking Xenon. It's about something about the connection of the reality that she experienced, and about whether or not she's insane, or if we just think about something and we make it up, technically we can make it physical.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you want to really go from a, like, if you really want to start bringing science into this whole thing, they say that, you know, traveling between planets is impossible. For any other species to travel to Earth is pretty much impossible. We're just too fucking far out here. We're in the boonies of the galaxy.
Oh.
But it would actually be easier for beings to travel from other dimensions. Like, we actually have science that proves that other dimensions exist.
Yep, and they are going to find Elon Musk's car one day when it goes through a black hole, and they're going to be like, this population on Earth is kind of D-baggy.
Yeah. He just needs to make one thing that he says he's going to do come real.
Thrower.
Yeah, and also, if he could stop drug testing his employees while going on Joe Rogan and smoking weed himself, that would be great.
Oh, drug test his employees?
Yeah, he's a fucking hypocrite.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. Elon Musk is not the god king that everyone says he is.
Next, you're going to
tell
me.
He would be if he could fucking figure out half the shit that he says he can figure out. Then I'll be with him.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And there was also the matter of the blue book that the aliens left behind in exchange for the Bible. Now, supposedly, Betty had 10 days with the book following the abduction, but when she looked at it, she pretty much just saw like a bunch of indecipherable symbols, and after 10 days, it disappeared.
Unless it got downloaded into her fucking brain.
Yeah.
No, but honestly, when you do trip on shrooms, and you're like, I got some great ideas, and you do start writing, and the next day, you're just like, cars, why?
Cars. Wheels are like feet, so cars are like people. I remember writing I found an old journal entry I had from doing mushrooms, and it was me just being like, nobody understands grokking, man, but I understand what it means to grok.
Yeah. Oh, God. So, stranger in a strange land, people.
Yeah, dude, it's like, that's how it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. Is you can really understand grokking only when you're tripping.
Yeah.
And then when you're not tripping anymore, fucking goes away.
I don't
totally.
Even know what grokking is.
It's grokking. So apparently,
he doesn't
grok it. Yeah, yeah.
What the hell is grokking?
I don't know, man. Remember, you're just not grokking it, you know? If you groked, then you could grok what grok is.
You'd be grokking it if you knew what grok was. You'd already be way ahead of us.
Yeah.
See, this is why it's like, oh, we have a 5-hour car ride from Phoenix to LA. And everyone's like, that must have been fun. This is all it is.
That's where the story ends for us.
Okay. For us.
For us. But that's not where the story ended for Betty and her daughter, Becky. Because after the Andreessen Affair was published, Raymond Fowler wrote two more books featuring the family called The Andreessen Affair Phase 2 and The Andreessen Legacy.
Well, she adds a lot more to the legacy. She went under regression a bunch of years later because afterwards she stopped doing hypnotic regression because I guess her life went to shit for a while. And then when she went back into it, she said that she'd been previously abducted and she'd built an entire legacy of an abduction, which is common when people are abduction, but her shit just started kind of going off the rails.
It really did. I mean, it went from being like a cool psychedelic experience to like a new age romp.
You know,
like, it's pretty likely that after the book was published, she just started being influenced by all these other stories from all these other New Age people. And that's when the cryptomnesia really took hold.
Because
her stories are pretty fucking boilerplate after
but
that.
Most of it was from my call, my quote-unquote expert's opinion is that it comes from her marriage to Bob Luca.
Mm-hmm, because she did find love out of all this. Because
oh.
After the abduction, Betty's marriage deteriorated due to a quote-unquote marital problem.
Which is what people say, that's shorthand for, they're too into UFOs, we're not this, right, we're not right. close anymore.
What's yeah. the legal term for batshit crazy? Can I file a divorce under that?
And apparently, right after Betty sent her letter to Dr. Hynek, the marital problem intensified, which resulted in divorce.
Non-joking, there is some stories that she was beaten very badly by her husband. We yeah. don't know. There's some of that, and things just kind of... This changed her life.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Now, was she able to make some cash out of this? Did she get some coin?
She sold the rights to her story. The Andreessen affair was purchased by Universal. But to be honest, this is the part of where people say that people who go on the news talk about being abducted by aliens, that they're always opportunists looking for money. Honestly, the most she made is $15,000.
Really?
And if that is the most she could have made with that, maybe she made other deals, but in terms of buying a life story, that's pretty much like the top of it. And then what's going to happen is that it's a long life of being ridiculed.
Totally. Don't sell your story. Hold on to it. Mm-hmm. That's what we learned a long time ago.
Oh, absolutely. So after Betty's hypnosis year, she moved to Florida and got a job as a waitress at a diner.
She must have been a pip.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I don't know if this is safe. She loves pancakes more than the tag team New Day from the WWE. I don't think we can trust her not to steal some batter. I don't think this is good. An alcoholic shouldn't be a bartender. This pancake fiend probably doesn't need to be working at a diner.
Well, while she was working there, she met a man named Bob Luca, who had just happened to be abducted by aliens as well.
And that's a meet cute.
Yeah, it's a meet cute. But, you know, what's really fun is that, you know, both of their stories ended up being really similar. So they got married and they spent years on the alien circuit together, happy in their shared alien experiences.
Oh, that's a great happy ending.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you right now, don't listen to any of the Bob and Betty Luca coast to coast stuff. I fell asleep.
Oh, yeah. It's boring. Huh?
Yeah. It's
how do you make this boring?
It's just droning. It's just the same story again and again. And they trot it out and they say the same story.
Well, I mean, that's what me and Henry were talking about a couple of days ago, is that talking about and writing about alien stuff is a blast. So much fun. We both love doing it. Alien research is fucking tedious.
It makes your eyes cross after a while, because you're just reading so many different accounts and things change a little bit. And then the one thing about UFO culture at all times is that someone always has to add their own agenda, which is a part of it. And then you're reading somebody essentially trying to sell you crystals or some kind of hat or like some kind of ration kit.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I think it's like looking at an IKEA. Put what do you call those things? A manual for an IKEA bookshelf.
Yeah, kind of.
That's a war on the American mind.
Swedish.
I know the Swedish. It's a war. It's a furniture war.
Mm-hmm.
Bastards making us all fight with our girlfriends.
Swedish. My bum is on the Swedish. Oh, remember that, Tom Green?
I remember, yeah.
That's for the 35-year-olds.
So no matter what really happened with Betty Andreessen, she believes her experiences wholeheartedly, as does her daughter, as does Bob Luca. While everything that came after the original sessions, that's pretty iffy, Betty Andreessen's original experience is nevertheless a fascinating study in the field of sober psychedelic experiences.
All right, there it is.
Fuck,
and she's saving money on shrooms, saving money on acid, certainly jail time if she got arrested.
Yes.
So that's good.
But you know what it is? And then Bob Luca Jr., though, did come out and say something along the lines that Bob Luca Sr. was a bit of an alcoholic, and when he'd black out, that's when he'd say he got abducted by aliens. I don't know if that's true.
Can we use that as an excuse?
Yes.
Because I just found out I canceled Spectrum Cable.
While you were blackout.
And then I had to go through my phone, and I was like, yep, talk to them Friday morning.
Unfortunately, I'm just going to say I'm a bit of a chrononaut, so I was time traveling at the time. There's no...
To be fair, you have been telling me for a while that you've been wanting to cancel your Spectrum cable. It sounds like you just made a pretty snap decision.
I was in Minnesota.
Were you camping?
No, I was at the VFW, screaming on the phone, making a business call. Like you do. I'm making a business call. Spectrum cable is the worst cable. Never get it. Don't succumb to the pressure that I did with the flyer.
So you and Dave were talking about your Spectrum cable.
No, I was waiting for them to come. I was waiting for everyone to arrive.
So you could tell me how I could watch so many channels.
Yes.
I'll tell you how many channels. I need zero. Yeah. I need zero.
And then I also called Chase Bank 5 times because they didn't have a Chase branch in Minnesota. Anyway, this is really boring, but...
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I did over the weekend.
Yeah, well, thank y'all very much for listening. And yes. Thanks to everyone who helped make our Washington, D.C. show a sellout.
Fuck oh, yeah. My God. Awesome.
Yeah. And we've announced one show on our upcoming tour. We're coming to Austin in November, and we've got a couple more dates that we're about to announce. So keep an eye out for that. But yeah, just Google Last Podcast on the Left Austin. We're coming in early November. I think it's the first Thursday or the first Thursday in November, I think we're coming to Austin.
And there was a glitch in the system. We are not yet announcing a show in Houston.
Right.
So that was a glitch.
Yeah. So that was a bit of a glitch. Sorry for everybody who got confused right. by that.
It's and nothing it, to do with us. There's a lot of working parts out there.
There's a lot of working parts
out of our controls.
So. Yeah. And you know, and sorry we didn't get to do the pre-sales on Austin for our Patreon because we're actually a part of the Moon Tower Festival for that one, so we can't really do pre-sales for festivals.
Oh.
Very cool. And of course, next weekend, I believe it's next weekend, we got Pygmalion.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is going to be super fun. And I'm doing a small little speaking thing at Culver Stockton College yeah. on Tuesday.
Ooh.
So that'll be like an hour of whatever.
What yeah. are you going to say?
I'm talking about, you know, picking yourself up and everything's oh, going to be okay.
Yeah, when you get knocked down. You get up
Let me
again.
Tell you
play
something about
Chumbawamba back and back to back to back.
When you call Spectrum, you don't take shit from these fucking salespeople.
Honestly, I might bring that up. And so course, that should be a lot of fun.
And of course, thanks to everyone who gives to our Patreon. If you feel like we deserve a little bit of cash for what we do here, you can go give at patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft. Thanks to everyone who's given so far. You've, of course, changed our lives over the last couple years.
Yes.
It's been wonderful. Yeah. I wouldn't get it any other way because now, I mean, like, I unfortunately can't go back.
Yeah.
And my life has changed in a way in which that in other parts of society, I am, I'm the anti of it.
Persona non grata.
Yeah, and I don't do good with the other normals. I don't do good anymore.
No.
Right. Well, I don't think you've changed a bit. Okay, everyone, thank you all so much for listening. We love you. Hail yourself!
Follow us on Twitter with all the bullshits at LP on the Left. Hail Satan!
Hail Gein.
Magustilations.
Hail me with all of your sweet goo-covered bodies.
Yeah, go eat some pancakes.
Yeah.
Have you read anything by Isaac Asimov? I'm good. That's nice.
You trying to seduce me?
Yeah.